We now take you live
to the Central Texas Command Center
in the heart of the resistance. You're listening to the Alex Jones Show.
Welcome to the Alex Jones Show on this Sunday, August 23rd, 2015. I'm David Knight, your host. Alex Jones is going to be joining us at the bottom of the hour. He's in Toronto. He had a speech last night. He spoke at a function that George Norrie had. He had a couple of guest speakers. Alex was one of those. And Alex is going to be joining us to talk about what happened, as well as to talk about, I'm sure he wants to talk about these two heroes, actually three heroes, I believe, that stopped that attack in France. We're going to break down the details of that when we come back on the news. We have another kind of hero that's going to be joining us in the program in the second hour. That's Thomas Drake. You know, we've got heroes who fight the enemy physically. That's exactly what these fellows in France did in the train. They knew that it was do or die for them as well as for the passengers on that train. They knew they had to do something, do it quickly, or they would be killed. They said reflex kicked in. Of course, that's something that's going to happen with everybody, but also their training. They were trained as soldiers, and that's not to discount at all their bravery. Certainly, there was a lot of bravery in that, what they did after they subdued the fellow, beat him unconscious. He had wounded the first military guy pretty heavily and actually almost cut off one of his fingers. I believe it was his thumb. At that point, however, instead of looking after himself, he was trained to take care of others. As a medic, he went to help other people who had been victims. A couple of people had been shot. One guy had a severe neck wound. He would have bled out if the soldier did not stop the bleeding. So that's the kind of selfless hero these guys are. We also have a selfless hero with Thomas Drake, an NSA whistleblower. You know, when you're a quiet hero, the kind that is doing the right thing when nobody is looking, the kind that has integrity and character, because that's the definition of character, doing the right thing when no one is watching you. It's very difficult to be in that kind of a position. We're going to talk to him about why he went to work for the NSA, why he became a whistleblower, what was he reporting. He began work on September 11th, the day of the attack. We're going to talk to him about how what he learned that was going on at the NSA, at the FBI, at the CIA before the attack. We're going to talk to him about what he was blowing the whistle about. We're going to talk to him about the disgusting parallels between the way he was retaliated for being a whistleblower, the retaliation against him, versus the way they have looked for every kind of excuse for Hillary Clinton. You understand that Hillary Clinton has been accused of mishandling classified documents. That was precisely what they came after Thomas Drake for. But rather than make excuses for Thomas Drake, they tried to lock him away for 35 years. He was only the fourth person to be prosecuted in that way under the Espionage Act. Of course, the first one was Daniel Ellsberg of the Pentagon Papers. It's an interesting story. It's an amazing story. And I think that there was far more than the alleged mishandling of documents. It was actually comical when you look at the documents. Mass collection is your friend, that type of thing. These were training manuals. They should not have been classified in the first place. Some of them were not classified when he got them. And that was the same excuse that Clinton has, except that her emails are emails that are born classified, as we discussed on Friday. A former official with the organization that classifies documents for the American government says that when you have conversations with the Secretary of State and foreign dignitaries, or they have intelligence that has been collected on foreign dignitaries by the NSA, that is born classified. Everyone knows that that kind of intelligence does not need to wait for a sticker or somebody to label that as being classified. So there's an amazing hypocrisy between these two cases. We're going to talk about that. We're also going to talk about the history of the Espionage Act. We're going to talk about the culture of trying to sell a philosophy of surveillance. One of the things that Thomas Drake did in the years before he went to the NSA was he watched carefully the Stasi, just as William Binney did. I think that's why he was so concerned about it. And again, joining us at the bottom of the hour is going to be Alex Jones. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Introducing Secret 12, the new InfoWars Life vitamin B12 formulation. Secret 12 is a binary of nutraceutical grade, bioavailable coenzyme forms of B12, methylcobalamin, the same kind used in B12 injections, and adenosylcobalamin. Secret 12 is simply taken by mouth, right on the tongue, and then swallowed. No needles, no injections. Secure your revolutionary Secret 12 formula right now at InfoWarsLife.com or call 888-253-3139.
Brain Force is here. Ladies and gentlemen, I've been on this the last few months. You probably noticed I've been more focused, less brain fog, more energy, and it's because of Brain Force.
There's always hidden additives in your food. Even organic food has hidden additives. Staring at the computer all day, working, doing good, you're still damaging your brain. Ultimately, we've all been dumbed down to some degree.
It doesn't have stimulants. It doesn't have garbage in it. It has natural things that do it clean.
You will find Brain Force and other game-changing products at InfoWarsLife.com or call 888-253-3139.
Waging war on corruption. It's Alex Jones.
It's the time of the season.
Welcome to the Alex Jones Show on this Sunday, August 23rd, 2015. I'm David Knight, your host. Alex Jones has been in Canada this weekend. He spoke at a George Norrie event in Toronto last night. He's going to be joining us, however, at the bottom of the hour. He's going to be calling in. And in the next hour, we have joining us Thomas Drake, one of the big NSA whistleblowers that were concerned about the mishandling. I wouldn't not say that he was actually charged, alleged of mishandling of documents, but he and William Binney and others were concerned about the way the government was mishandling your information, violating the Constitution, the dragnet surveillance, the massive boondoggle, the massive waste involved in that. There were a lot of different aspects of things that they were concerned about. They went through official channels. They were shut down. Eventually, they went to the press, and then there was retaliation. Interestingly enough, from the same prosecutors that gave the banks no prosecution. Lanny Breuer, the guy who became famous for his too big to jail comments about HSBC. Remember, HSBC was laundering money for drug cartels, for terrorists. The Sinaloa cartel with El Chapo, remember him? He just escaped from prison. Donald Trump was talking about him a lot. Well, they were laundering money for him. He had his own private window at HSBC. HSBC and other big banks had been caught before laundering money. They had been given probation, a little slap on the wrist, not much at all. They caught them again because they didn't reform their processes, their procedures. That time they gave them a larger fine, still a very, very small fine concerning the amount of profit that they had made. And they said, we are not going to take away their charter. That would not serve the interests of the American people. And for that, everybody said, well, you're saying that they're too big to jail, just like they were too big to fail back under the Bush administration. Nevertheless, the same Lanny Breuer comes after Thomas Drake. And what did he come after him for? Well, he came after him for allegedly mishandling classified documents, not giving them to a foreign power, but allegedly mishandling them. Precisely the same charges that many people are alleging about Hillary Clinton. However, the information that Hillary Clinton has, both in quantity and in its classified nature, makes the three or four documents that they came after Thomas Drake for pale in comparison. It's not even close. I mean, he had things like bulk collection is our friend. We'll talk to him about the exact things. Things that should not have even been classified. Things that were employee handouts. It wasn't the private conversation with foreign dignitaries. So we're going to talk to him about what happened as a whistleblower, his concerns about the NSA, the dangers that he sees, because as I mentioned in the last segment, like William Binney, he spent a great deal of time watching East Germany and the Stasi. He knows what a surveillance state it looks like. He also knows that what we are capable of now is far more dangerous than anything that ever happened under the Stasi. So I want to talk to Thomas Drake because I want people to understand how there's a double legal standard here, how we have a dark double government, as he points out. People like Hillary Clinton can do whatever they wish and get away with whatever they do. But people who point out the crimes of government are retaliated against, like Thomas Drake. He also has something to tell us about 9/11. I'm very interested to talk to him about that as well. Now, we have some other heroes that we're going to be talking about here in just a moment. But before we do, those are the people who stopped the terrorist attack on the train. Before we do, I want to go over some economic news. These are a couple articles that are up on Infowars.com. The global economy is officially melting down. They say as much as the financiers on Wall Street and the officials of the Fed would like to keep the party going, it looks like it is about to stop. This is from Joshua Krauss, the Daily Sheeple. He says, years of bailout and monetary expansion have created one of the most inflated and artificial economic booms in history. He points out the Dow has fallen 1,300 points from its peak. On Friday alone, it fell by 530 points, making it the ninth worst stock market crash in U.S. history. Another article we have says the two-day stock market crash this week was greater than any one-day stock market crash in U.S. history. It was an 888-point crash. Going on with some of the other metrics from this first article, he says the Shanghai composite fell by more than 11% this week. China's stock market has lost a third of its value since its previous peak. He says it's lost 4% of its value on just Friday alone after it was revealed their manufacturing activity had reached a 77-month low. That's over 6 years, about 6.5 years. 400 of the world's richest people lost a total of $182 billion this week, amounting to 6% of their collective wealth. I won't be crying for them, but you have to be concerned that they will do something very dangerous. Just as we heard before 9/11, they need another Pearl Harbor. That works whether you want to build the size of the NSA or whether you want to shake things up so you can make money, because they make money when things rise rapidly and they make money when things fall rapidly. They can go long or they can go short. They can buy into it or they can sell these things short. So they can make a lot of money if they create a massive crisis. One more metric here. They say commodities have fallen to a 13-year low. The price of copper has reached a 6-year low, while oil has suffered its longest decline since 1986. So that's the economic news. Very concerning, because usually in August is very quiet. Things usually change in September and October. And we've had a lot of people saying they expected big changes for a lot of different reasons. A lot of people have different ways they forecast the economy. A lot of them expecting big changes in September. And we haven't even gotten there yet. We've got another week of August, and already we've had massive moves. Also, we have some information about Planned Parenthood and the videos that have exposed the criminal, I would say, activities there. Court has now removed the injunction on the Planned Parenthood videos. That was an injunction that was put in there to stop them from showing any videos from STEM Express. They have now released the newest video of that. And of course, what are they talking about? They're talking about people who are getting entirely complete babies. Lab recipients get aborted babies. They say they go into shock when they open the box to find an, quote, intact case. In other words, a whole body. They say, yeah, if you got an intact case, which we've done a lot, we sometimes ship those back to our lab in its entirety. Tell the lab it's coming, because they'll open up the box and go, oh my God. Yeah, I bet they will. I bet they will. Now, there were massive protests yesterday across the country against Planned Parenthood. There were over 300 protests that were set up on Saturday. We have an article up on Infowars.com showing some of the Twitter feeds, showing some of the pictures, people's reports about how many people that were there. Louisville, they had some about 200 in Oklahoma City, they say, over 1,000 in Aurora, Illinois, over 600 in Lincoln, Nebraska. They say about 300 plus in Nashville. I looked at some of the ones in North Carolina from some of my friends that were putting them out. Charlotte had about 400 people turn out to that rally. In Raleigh, they had about 100 people. And let's see, this is Greensboro. They had about 130 people. If you've got 300 rallies across the country and an extremely conservative figure of 100, which is the smallest one of those cities that I saw, and that was in Raleigh, that would give you 30,000. But, of course, there's some places that have 400, some places that have 1,000 people there. I hope we have turned the corner on this. I hope we understand, finally, the value of life. Like many people, I was sitting on the fence, not thinking about it a great deal. I thought of it as an individual's choice until we saw the entire birth of a child except for the top of their head, a partial birth abortion, they call it. At that point, I realized that it was murder. And at this point, I think people are waking up to not only the profit motive of Planned Parenthood, and we've talked to Abby Johnson, who was a Planned Parenthood employer of the year, a manager in Houston. She resigned because she realized that they were not just trying to help young women coming in there, pregnant women, to make a decision to give them treatments. They were pushing them towards an abortion. They had a quota that they needed to do. And she also saw ultrasound of a child that was being aborted, and she saw it recoiling in pain, trying to get away. They told her, well, it's too young to feel any pain. She saw otherwise. I think that America is having that kind of wake-up moment. I certainly hope so. Stay with us. We're going to be right back. We're going to talk about what happened in the French train accident, and Alex Jones will be joining us at the bottom of the hour. Stay tuned.
We are on the march. The Empire is on the run. Alex Jones and the GCN Radio Network.
Welcome back to the Alex Jones Show on this Sunday, August 23rd, 2015. I'm David Knight, your host. Alex Jones is going to be joining us in the next segment. He went to Toronto last night to speak to at a George Norrie event. He was one of the guest speakers there last night, one of the featured speakers. He's going to be calling us to tell us about that, and I'm sure that he wants to weigh in on the situation in France, where there was a terrorist attack on one of the trains, a man with an AK-47, and he also had a pistol. He had a box cutter with him. His AK-47 jammed. That's one of the reasons why these guys were able to take him down, but they didn't know that it was jammed at the time. They thought they were going to die. The crew on the Paris-bound train barricaded themselves in their staff room and locked the door as he was going through the train. His 26-year-old Moroccan national, Air Force Airman Spencer Stone, ran at the gunman when he opened fire on the high-speed service to Paris. Also joining him was Oregon National Guard member Alec Scarlatus and Anthony Sandler from California. They were friends. And British national Chris Norman. They beat him senseless and tied him up, waiting for the authorities. And, of course, Spencer Stone was severely injured himself. He was cut several times with a box cutter, and his thumb, I think it was, one of his fingers at least, was nearly cut off. Nevertheless, in spite of that wound, he went to the aid of passengers, a couple of whom had been shot. So these guys took the pistol from him, then they took the AK-47 and beat him with his own gun until he was unconscious. They say officials did not disclose a positive motive for the attack. Do you think it might have been terrorism? That was the narrative for the first couple of days. I thought, who are they talking to in France? They don't know if this was a terrorist event. I mean, are they getting their information from Inspector Clouseau? This is about as smoking gun as you get, folks. Yeah, it was a terrorist event. One of the fellows that was there, one of the heroes, said he had a Kalashnikov. He had a magazine that was full. My thought was, okay, probably I'm going to die anyway, but let's go. I'd rather die being active. They say one of the airman Spencer Stone, with his arm in a sling, recounted on Sunday how he and two other Americans tackled the gunman. He says it seemed like he was ready to fight to the end, but he said, so were we. He's hailed as not only being the first to grapple with the attacker, that is Stone, but also for helping to stop the bleeding of a French-American passenger that was wounded by a bullet. That's the one that I mentioned, where he stopped the bleeding. The fellow could have bled to death. In the beginning, it was mostly gut instinct survival, he said. Our training kicked in after the struggle. And one person, the U.S. ambassador, says of them, we often use the word hero. And in this case, I know that word has never been more appropriate. That's U.S. Ambassador Jane Hartley. She says they truly are heroes. When most of us would run away, Spencer, Alec, and Anthony ran into the line of fire and said, let's go. That changed the fate of many people. And, you know, there are heroes who do the physical attacks, as I mentioned at the very beginning of the show, and then there are those who are the quiet heroes. People like our guest in the second hour, Thomas Drake. He is someone who did the hero's job, but did it in a way that is very difficult. So not to take anything away from the people who did this, who saved their lives, who saved others' lives, who risked their lives to do that. But we have to understand that Thomas Drake risked his life as well. He had a family. He had a son who was very sick. He had a secure position. When you're in a position of comfort like that, it's very easy to rationalize that you should just follow authority. You should just do what the government is telling you. It will all be better in the long run. Thomas Drake, however, understood the Constitution. He understood where this leads because, like William Binney, he had monitored East Germany and the Stasi for a very long time. And that hardened his resolve to where he would put his life on the line, doing it quietly when no one would see. But some people did see. I want to play for you what Edward Snowden said about Thomas Drake, our guest in the second hour. Here's what Ed Snowden said about him.
Fair to say that if there hadn't been a Thomas Drake, there couldn't have been an Edward Snowden. Here we had a guy who did absolutely everything right. He placed his faith in the system. He saw, you know, the warrantless wiretapping of hundreds of millions of Americans. He saw corruption. He brought it to the IG. He brought it to the Congress. And rather than protecting him, they actively retaliated against him in the most public and aggressive way.
Yes, they did retaliate against him. They tried to put him in jail for 35 years. They came after him for mishandling of classified information. The documents that they accused him of mishandling were nonsense compared to what Hillary Clinton has. And for her, they look for every excuse they can not to prosecute her. We're going to talk to him about what he saw, what he blew the whistle on, what the dangers are to America, the different ways that those who run our dark and secret double government escape prosecution. We're also going to talk about the Espionage Act because I want to lay some of the history down on this for you before he gets here. So he'll be free to give you his story without getting burdened down with the backstory of what went on with the Espionage Act and what we have seen with that for a number of years. I want to tell you about that. I also want to tell you about how the TSA is coming to the movies. Before I do, real quickly, we have a limited time special at InfoWarsLife.com. 30% off Silver Bullet, or you can still get two Silver Bullet, get two free. We brought that special back along with 30% off of a single bottle to let you give that a try. Of course, Silver Bullet is our powerful colloidal silver product. It's free of artificial additives. It's perfect for your preparedness supply. It's a great time to stock up on it when you can get it either 30% off or 50% off if you get two bottles of it. It's concentrated to 30 parts per million. It's in a pure base of deionized water. There's a reason that listeners have dubbed Silver Bullet as their preparedness silver. So right now is a great time to get it with this sale that's going on. You can get that at InfoWarsLife.com, 30% off of one bottle, or buy two, get two free. Now, where is this all going to lead, of course? Where is the surveillance state going to lead? It's a gradual, incremental movement. Just as I pointed out on Friday when I talked about the people who are reacting to the manufactured crisis of the open borders, and it is a manufactured crisis. It's manufactured like all of these crises are. They create a crisis. They use that to show the problem. They use that to expand the government over and over again, whether it is the NSA and the Patriot Act or whether it is going to be the kind of movement controls that I'm very concerned about in many different areas. I'm looking at what the government is planning in terms of controlling our movement, our transportation with autonomous cars, constantly tracking, constantly reporting our movement, able to shut down our movement if they wish. Do we really want to give them that capability at the border? Do we really want to throw fire on the fuel on the fire of the TSA, telling them, yeah, you're the transportation authority. We want you out on the highways. We want you especially down at the border. Do we really want to do that? We need to understand that just like gun control, when there's a tragedy, the politicians will use that tragedy to try to push for gun control. In the same way, we see the Republicans using tragedies, violent crimes that are committed by illegal aliens, using that to push for more security theater. The wall will be absolute theater, but the high tech behind the population tracking will not be theater. Stay with us. We'll be right back with Alex Jones, Thomas Drake, in the next hour.
now take you live to the Central Texas Command Center in the heart of the resistance. It's Alex Jones.
Welcome back to the Alex Jones Show on this Sunday, August 23rd, 2015. I'm David Knight. As I've been mentioning, we're going to be joined in the second hour by NSA whistleblower Thomas Drake, the only one of the whistleblowers who was prosecuted by the government. They alleged that he had mishandled documents, not anywhere like the document mishandling that we've seen from Hillary Clinton. They said that he had obstructed and destroyed evidence. It turned out that he hadn't. The entire case folded the day before they went to court. They were scolded by the judge. And, of course, the person who was overseeing the prosecution was Lenny Brewer, the same guy who let HSBC and all the large banks walk, said they're too big to jail, essentially. Obama said, well, there were some laws that they didn't break. Yeah, there were some laws that they didn't break. That's not to say that they didn't break a whole lot of laws that they really should have gone to jail for. Someone should have gone to jail for it. They got a very small fine. Hillary Clinton, so far, nothing is happening to her. She still is a pretty popular candidate. She's still the candidate to beat. She's taken a hit in some of her popularity and some of the other politicians who would like to take her place, like Governor O'Malley. Former Governor O'Malley says we have to look to the future. He went on to the NBC show. Actually, it was ABC he was talking to. And he said, we cannot allow our party to be branded by those sorts of questions of the past. That's actually a pretty good description of Hillary Clinton. She is a question of the past. He says, we have to look to the future. We have to offer ideas and move our country forward for the future. That's why it's important to have debates. But, of course, you're not going to have any debates on the Democrat side as long as Hillary Clinton is a candidate. Everybody is going to be debating her history. There's a lot of history with Hillary Clinton. There's a lot of skeletons in her closet. But it is absolutely astonishing to see how they are avoiding prosecution for Hillary Clinton for the very serious classified documents that she really did mishandle, for the obstruction of justice that she engaged in, and see how they came after they invented these charges and tried to send Thomas Drake to jail for decades because he had blown the whistle on corruption, on waste, and on criminal activity. He and William Binney and others were exposing the fact that our government was engaged in massive surveillance, that they had changed the rules after September 11th. He actually began on September 11th. We're going to talk about September 11th. We're going to talk about the parallels with Clinton, and we're going to break down the history of that. Before we do, though, I wanted to take a look at what is happening at the TSA, but actually we're going to be joined now by Alex Jones, who is reporting from Toronto, Canada. Alex.
David, I am standing here from an island off the coast of Toronto, Canada, looking at people having a great time, playing tennis, playing badminton, swimming in one of the major great lakes here. And it's so picturesque, and it just really makes me, at a very deep, fundamental level, want to protect these people and to want to warn them about what's happening. And it is the fact that people are so innocent, so nice, so friendly, of every race, color, creed, nationality. They all just want to have good lives, healthy, happy children, contribute to the world. They want to help other people. Are really, really good. And it's because people historically are so blind to the fact that true evil exists in the world, that it's able to grow and able to breed. And, you know, you're up here seeing this for yourself. It's people of the same. And it's so sad. It's also very positive for some good things. Obviously, George Murray's event to a capacity crowd of wonderful people. Took about 2 hours last night at the meet and greet afterwards to shake about 1,000 people's hands. And these folks were so awake and so impassioned and are taking action on so many fronts, it was buoying. And so the good news is, yes, the general public is still somewhat asleep, but exponentially they're waking up. And that's why the globalists are accelerating their programs right now, as you know, David. There's a lot happening. I was going to be back today, but because of flights and issues and getting up here late, I am now coming back tomorrow, but I will be filing reports in the morning and live during the show tomorrow with David, actually from my Skype computer before the airport. So I will be co-hosting part of the show tomorrow. Just wanted to give folks an update on that. But what's amazing is when I walk down the street in Austin, Texas, again, this is just a gauge of how awake the world is. As I've said hundreds of times, the average person who isn't well-known in the Liberty Movement doesn't know that people all around, they don't have a way to have sonar, radar, or recognition to map that. I do. And I carry over to the airport.
I think we're losing Alex there. It's breaking up. He's calling us from Canada. Again, he was reporting about the event there that he spoke at, one of the featured speakers there. I think the key speaker, is he back? Okay. Go ahead, Alex.
Yes, again, I am calling you via cell phone because I'm calling from this island. Itself, not the city of Toronto. And so I've only got a few cell bars here. I'm not going to take up too much more time, but I did promise to call in and report on the show today, so that's what I'm doing. Bottom line, just now taking a few minutes off to swim in this great lake, I had no fewer than five people of a beach of probably 30 people, because it's not that busy, come over and shake my hand. One lady was from Canada. Another guy was from the U.S. Another lady was from Argentina. Her husband's a big listener. Other folks who barely spoke English were like Alex Jones from China. I mean, this is what's really exciting, is that the awakening is exponential, and no matter where I go, we are running into people that are awake, whether it's Europe or whether it's Canada or whether it's Mexico or whether it's Honduras. People are awake, and of course, there's so many other people waking folks up that have listeners and supporters around the world. I'm only one small gauge of that, so that's the really exciting news. The bad news is this looks like some type of tit for tat, this China explosion, now this U.S. military base explosion outside Tokyo, that's still going off as we speak, just ultra massive event. There's all sorts of black ops going on. Henry Kissinger has come out and said that basically Obama screwed up, pushing Russia too far and made us look like the bad guys. Of course, he wants to take over. He just doesn't want to fail. And so there's a lot of good things happening, a lot of bad things happening. But we had Mr. Dent and other guests on in the last 2 months saying they believe the collapse is coming in September or October. And we just had Dent on 2 weeks ago, and he said within 2 weeks, he would expect the bubble to start collapsing again. There was a dead cat bounce, according to his graphs. Well, we just saw a 1,000-point drop on Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday. And even if they try to prop it back up, it shows. And people say, well, it's a bubble. It should go down. Well, absolutely. The problem is we're in trouble even in a bubble. So people are waking up. There's some good things happening. The globalist agenda is failing with Russia. Not that Russia's perfect, but we want there to be a multipolar world. Not a single ring to rule them all, Mordor. We want diversity. We want firewalls of nation states against globalism. So a lot of positive things are happening, David, as you know, but also a lot of really negative things are happening as this cascade of events races towards an even bigger event in the near future. George Soros and the White House have revealed that Hillary Clinton is involved with her senior staffers, as well as Nancy Pelosi staffers with Black Lives Matter. Trying to stir everyone up and get everybody fighting with each other. It really is an amazing thing to see what's happening and all these different confluences of events. The stars aligned politically are coming up. And the good news is, just take the abortion videos. Just take those, David.
Oh, absolutely.
Notice how 70% of people in polls or higher want to stop these abortions now. And so notice, they've gone in, they've gotten the videos, and they're heroes.
Defending the Republic from enemies, foreign and domestic. It's Alex Jones.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are live. I'm coming to you from Lake Ontario, one of the great lakes. I'm out here on a little island. I decided to take half the day off and come over here and investigate and talk to folks. And let me tell you, it's one of the prettiest places I've ever been. This is an amazing creation that God made. And I just look at the people, the little dogs swimming. I'm in the interior of the small island now. There's people playing badminton and just hanging out. It's like a small town here. The houses look like hobbits, could be walking out of them any minute. I'm here to tell you I'm not being paid by the Tourism Board of Canada, but this is definitely somewhere that I'm going to be taking the family vacationing next summer. Now I know why so many Texans like to come up to the Great Lakes in Michigan and Minnesota, but also right up here in Canada. This definitely takes the cake. I have a really serious next hour coming up. I'm joining you via cell phone. David Knight is in the radio/TV studio in Austin, Texas. I want to thank him for the fabulous job, not filling in, not sitting in for me, but doing as good a job or better than I do. But, again, I will be back tomorrow. David will be co-hosting much of the show with me, but I'll be co-hosting from Canada. I'll be back tomorrow night. Trying to get back to what I was saying earlier when my cell phone was cutting out. What I'm getting at is this. We are at a critical crossroads. Everyone knows that. We keep warning everybody about it, and now it becomes clearer and clearer that we're right and that serious things are about to break loose, the good, the bad, and the extremely, extremely ugly. And so now is the time to get our houses in order, to get right with God, to be thinking about what's happening, but to also kind of change the destiny of the world by taking action. God gives us free will. God sets out a course and a general path and works through good people, the corrupt forces through the bad. But we decide much of what happens in our universe, in our world. And I'm glad I went on this trip because I would never watch a children's movie like Tomorrowland, especially because George Clooney's in it, even though I was in a movie he produced, Scanner Darkly. I figured it was all global warming propaganda because of the ads I'd seen, and I probably should have gone and seen it. I just can't stand more propaganda. Well, I ended up watching it on the plane because I decided to do some research. I said, okay, I'll watch it. Bit my lip. Something told me watch it. Overall, I've got to really watch this film again and do a whole report on it. Very positive on the surface. It exposes revelation of the method, a breakaway civilization that has culled the greatest minds of children since the 1940s. Into a breakaway program 100 times bigger than the Manhattan Project that is operating outside of the general public's knowledge on government reservations. And they've decided to go ahead and not give people the advanced technology. They've decided to keep the life extension and everything else for themselves. And in the process of that, because of the brain drain from the planet into the elite, the world is about to basically destroy itself with nuclear war with their computer probabilities. But then they basically are able to take out the bad guys, the elite, that want to hoard all the power for themselves and are able to reverse the probability of humans destroying themselves. This film is extremely powerful. I don't know if it's good or bad. It's very, very heavy. It's cheesy. It has product placement in it, propaganda placement, where all the heroes are women, and of course, that's a new directive. I'm not against women being heroes in movies. I have two daughters. I love it. The problem is it's a directive admitted by the United Nations UNESCO program. If folks look into that, video games, you name it. So it's all part of our media being controlled. So this is a propaganda film, but it's also the elite saying that they were basically wrong and that they don't want to kill everybody. It's kind of like the last Superman movie was the same story about eugenics. So are they conditioning us so we're subconsciously ready to accept it? Or are people rebelling within the system and putting films out like this? The only bad thing is it puts out a very truthful message so that you subconsciously take it in. People already know subconsciously about the breakaway civilization. The problem is that it then puts the lie of global warming at the heart of it and the way to save the Earth. So very, very sophisticated propaganda. I'm going to have to really watch it again and come to my final judgment. But it is extremely heavy and is about human empowerment, the final equation. I think that's why the film probably didn't do too well. And a lot of folks didn't really understand it because it's dealing with some things that are so real world, it would make your head spin. But that's basically it. I've got a lot more to report on the show tomorrow, where I'll be in the hotel room, so it'll be nice and clear, HD audio, probably video with David Knight, and then Lord willing, I'll be back in the U.S. tomorrow. Again, just the super good news that people are even more more awake, it seems, in Canada than when I see in the United States. Just patriots are everywhere. So don't feel alone out there, ladies and gentlemen. Keep speaking out. Keep taking action. We can turn this thing around with God's help, but we have to take the first step. And I want to thank everybody also that supports this broadcast, the wonderful team we have. It is such a blessing, all the affiliates we have. There is a ton of news, obviously, coming up. I filed a report on Saturday. Seems like a million years ago, but it was just yesterday. It was actually Friday evening when I first got to Denver, because that's where I flew through. And they had reported first it was two Marines that had tackled and stopped the shooter. And, of course, later they said it was one Army, one Air Force. It doesn't matter who they were, whether they were military or not. They took action and took the gun away from the guy and then got cut up by his box cutter, but stopped him. And that's such an important story because do you really believe on not one, not two, but three different aircraft on 9/11 that everyone didn't fight back? I mean, I'm going to tell you right now, I'm not the toughest guy around, but if people jump up with box cutters or whatever on board an airplane with me, and there's three of them, I'm going to fight back if I'm by myself. I mean, think about it, folks. If you're on a plane and you're rude to some guy, he'll threaten to kick your butt. I mean, people where I've grown up and all over the country, you mess with them, they'll fight you. I don't care what color they are, where they're from. I just fundamentally don't believe 9/11 because of things like that. But also, the FBI admitted that none of the high-altitude phone calls were really made. The only real ones were from air phones, and both stewardesses, flight attendants, said there was gas, smoke. They couldn't breathe. They were being nerve-gassed. We don't know exactly what happened on 9/11, but we know the official story isn't true, and we now know they're suppressing Saudi Arabian involvement and our government standing down. But again, the good news is the truth is coming out. Well, thanks for putting up with me on cell phone. Sorry to David and the crew. I tried to get to a place where audio Skype would work, but the whole next hour is going to be extremely informative with a major whistleblower. Don't you have a big whistleblower coming on, David?
Yes, Alex, we have Thomas Drake. He was the only whistleblower from the NSA to have the Justice Department try to put him in jail. Of course, it was Lanny Brewer, the guy who said the banks who were laundering money were too big to jail, but they came after him for the same things that Hillary Clinton has been doing. They allege that he mishandled classified documents. He really didn't, but she really is, and they're doing everything to avoid going after her.
Wow. Yeah, of course, we've got Hillary that's in deep trouble. We've got 9/11 coming out. We've got the insider trading coming out all over the world. We've got the Vatican being blackmailed coming out. I mean, really, everything is being revealed. They're cutting the fluoride out of the water now that they've announced. I mean, really, David, we're having victories on every front. So I want to thank the audience because you are the heart and the tip of the spear of the Liberty Movement worldwide. InfoWars, you are the power. The listeners of this transmission, what a brain trust, what an honor, and what a responsibility for all of us. David Knight, thank you so much. I'm going to turn the show back over to you. I'll see you tomorrow.
Thank you, Alex. And again, that's Alex Jones reporting from Toronto, and he'll be joining us tomorrow on the radio program as well. As we pointed out, in the next hour, Thomas Drake is going to be with us talking about his experiences, what he saw at the NSA, why we should be concerned about the encroachment on our freedoms, the destruction of the Constitution. He had this to say when he got an award from the Sam Adams Associates for Integrity and Intelligence. He quoted from Frederick Douglass in part of Frederick Douglass's 1857 speech and basically paraphrased it. With some references, he said, "Power and those in control concede nothing without a demand. They never have, they never will. Each and every one of us must keep demanding, must keep fighting, must keep thundering, must keep plowing. We must keep on keeping things struggling. We must speak out and speak up until justice is served, because where there is no justice, there is no peace." He put his life on the line. It ruined his career. They tried to lock him up for the rest of his natural life. This is a man who is every bit as much a hero as the people who charged the gunman in that train this weekend. We're going to talk to him in the next hour. In the next segment, we're going to lay some background of the Espionage Act, because he's one of the few people who have been charged with that. Most of those people who have been charged with the Espionage Act have been charged by the Obama administration. More people than all the previous 100 years of presidents combined. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Central Texas Command Center, deep behind enemy lines, the information war continues. It's Alex Jones and the GCN Radio Network.
Welcome back to the Alex Jones Show. I'm David Knight, your host today. Joining us in the next segment is Thomas Drake, NSA whistleblower. He is the fourth person to have been charged under the 1917 Espionage Act. This is something that, as Bloomberg points out, since 2009, President Obama has charged nine people under the 1917 Espionage Act with passing classified information to media outlets. This is something that was never done before. There were only two people prior to that. The first person to be charged in that way, of course, is Daniel Ellsberg with the Pentagon Papers. The Nixon administration went after him. When this was passed in 1917, Woodrow Wilson said this was going to go after naturalized citizens. In other words, this is not for you, Americans. Don't be worried about this. We're going to get involved in foreign wars for the first time, and we're going to pass all kinds of censorship rules, but this is not for you. This is for naturalized citizens, he said, who have poured the poison of disloyalty into the very arteries of our national life. But, of course, that's not the way it's being used now. It was rarely used to go after alleged leakers of classified information until 1973, when they went after Daniel Ellsberg. Prior to that, they had, in the war, in the time after World War I, they had gone after people who had passed information to foreign powers, people who were spies. In 1917, however, it was a little bit different. Shortly after they passed this Espionage Act, they used it against Eugene Debs. He was the person who was a five-time presidential candidate for the Socialist Party. And a lot of people talk about that, how because he was opposing the war, he was targeted. He was sentenced to 10 years in prison. He served 5 years before his sentence was commuted. But I want to talk to you about the second person who was charged under the Espionage Act. This is a man, Robert Goldstein. He produced a film. That's what he was charged under the Espionage Act of Woodrow Wilson for. The film was The Spirit of 76. It was done in 1917. It was about the American Revolutionary War. It was a silent film. He would later go to prison for making this silent film. Let me tell you why. Woodrow Wilson had a lot of pushback against being involved in foreign wars. We now have an American empire that is doing one undeclared war after the other. We have multiple wars going on at the same time. They're pushing so hard to try to start a war with Russia that even Henry Kissinger is pushing back against this. He's a globalist. He's a long-term globalist, but he doesn't want to see even that. So even Henry Kissinger is pushing back against what they are currently doing right now. It is absolute madness. But in 1917, Woodrow Wilson was trying to convince the American people to break with a longstanding American tradition of avoiding foreign entanglements. So he was very sensitive to anything that would undermine what he perceived to be the rah-rah patriotism of the war. This film, 76, Spirit of 76, premiered in Chicago in May of 1917, just 1 month after the U.S. entered World War I on the side of Britain. The head of the Chicago Police Censorship Board, and get this guy's name, Metallus Lucullus Cicero Funkhauser. But more importantly, the fact that there's a Chicago Police Censorship Board. They confiscated the film at the behest of the Justice Department on grounds that it generated hostility towards Britain, who were our allies at the time. Goldstein trimmed the offending scenes, and he received federal approval to continue the Chicago run. And the offending scenes were things showing British soldiers bayoneting babies, things that largely fictional, although there were a couple of real massacres that were depicted in the film. Nevertheless, it was over-the-top fiction in the film. And Woodrow Wilson thought that it would turn people against our British allies. So he excised that in Chicago, but when they premiered the film in L.A. a few months later, the deleted scenes were then restored. After an investigation, the government concluded that Goldstein's actions constituted, quote, abating and abetting the German army. They seized the film. They sentenced him to 10 years in jail, a $5,000 fine. Understand, that'd be about $500,000 today. And he couldn't claim the First Amendment because the Supreme Court had ruled in 1915 that movies didn't fall under First Amendment protection. Interesting, isn't it? They overruled that in 1952. Another illustration of how we cannot trust the Supreme Court to be honest about the Constitution. But Thomas Drake is honest about the Constitution. He'll be joining us.
on the march. The empire is on the run. Alex Jones and the GCN Radio Network.
Welcome back to the Alex Jones Show. I'm David Knight, your host. Joining us now is Thomas Drake, one of the NSA whistleblowers that went public about the Dragnet surveillance and the way that the NSA was ignoring the law, ignoring the Constitution after September 11th. I want to introduce Mr. Drake, but before I do, I want to let you know that Supermail Vitality is back in stock. We've been sold out for weeks. You can now get that at InfoWarsLife.com. We're now taking orders on this emergency shipment. We have hundreds of five-star reviews there. You can take a look at those reviews at InfoWarsLife.com. We also have Survival Shield X2 Nascent Iodine. Over 400 reviews on InfoWarsLife.com on Nascent Iodine. 99% of the respondents would recommend this to a friend or family member. Go to InfoWarsLife.com, take a look at those reviews, and you can get both Survival Shield X2 Nascent Iodine and Supermail Vitality back in stock at InfoWarsLife.com. Now, joining us now is Thomas Drake. Mr. Drake is a whistleblower who has dedicated his life to safeguarding his country. He's a 10-year veteran of the Air Force. He specialized in intelligence. He served as a CIA analyst and a contractor for the National Security Agency, the NSA, for 12 years before joining full-time in 2001. And actually, it was on September 11th was his very first day there, unlike Chris Christie, who says that he joined on September 11th. We'll talk about that. When Drake saw mass waste and abuse at the and billions of dollars being spent on Operation Stellar Wind, he took his concerns to superiors in the NSA. He tried to go through channels. He was stonewalled by his superiors in the NSA. Nothing happened with the congressional reviews. After a while, he thought that the public had a right to know. So he took this to a Baltimore Sun reporter. He made legal disclosures of unclassified information. She wrote a series of award-winning articles that exposed the billion-dollar boondoggle at the NSA. Then the empire struck back. We saw a reprisal. Drake was ratcheted up to the maximum criminal prosecution they could get under the Espionage Act of 1917. The government conducted an armed raid of his home. They interrogated him for hours, confiscated his personal notes and computers, threatened him with spending the rest of his natural life behind bars. They charged him, of course, with retention of classified material, not disclosure, not passing it to someone else. And so we're going to talk to him about the parallels in what they accused him of and what it appears that Hillary Clinton has done. But before we do that, welcome, Mr. Drake.
Thanks for having me.
I really appreciate you coming on. You're one of my heroes. I can't say that enough. Someone who put their life on the line because you understood really what was at stake. For many years, you watched the Stasi operating in East Germany, just like William Binney did. You were very concerned about where we're headed. And I look at this, and there's so many Americans don't really see the danger in what is going on and how we're slipping into this dark surveillance state. What can you tell us about what you saw with the East Germans, with Stasi and state, and what you're concerned about happening here in America? What are the dangers? What is it going to be like for Americans?
Well, the danger is we don't learn the dark lessons of our own past. And, you know, that's rather recent history, how easy it is to drift into dystopia and, you know, let others take over and take charge. And, you know, that was a police state. It reigned with fear. It kept enormous records on essentially the entire population, as well as many other people outside of East Germany. I didn't spend all those years, you know, listening in on the communications of East Germany without it affecting me in terms of what it meant for history. And I just never imagined that I'd find myself, you know, shortly after 9/11, discovering that the United States had sort of borrowed the playbook, as it were, from the Stasi. And under the cover of 9/11, which was, you know, an enormous failure, although some would say it was, you know, never let a crisis go to waste, in the infamous words of Rahm Emanuel, former chief of staff for Obama. Never let the crisis go to waste. And so they ended up suspending the Constitution. And part of suspending the Constitution is the actions they took in the deepest of secrecy that I ended up finding out about. And it was Pandora's box opening up. And when you're staring into Pandora's box, the deep abyss stares back at you, and you have that choice, your own moral agency as to what you do. You could attempt to close the box and the lid on the box and act as if nothing happened, or do you actually take action? And I had taken an oath for the fourth time to support and defend the Constitution, you know, a piece of paper, but it's the fundamental principles in terms of how we govern ourselves. And I would not break faith with that oath. I would not.
And you had a very comfortable existence. You had a family. I read that you had a young son who was sick at the time. I mean, you're looking at this, and you've got to make some hard decisions. You're doing this in secret. As I was pointing out before, in parallel to the heroes who took down the gunman on the French train, they said they were acting on instinct. And, of course, they see this guy's going to shoot them, going to shoot everybody if they don't do something. But you're in an environment where it's very easy to just take the easy way out, to rationalize that this is what the people in authority want, and so I should do as I'm ordered. You've got to be feeling those kinds of pressures to rationalize that. I think there's a lot of people that don't see the long-term view of what's going to happen with this. It's very easy for people to rationalize that and to say, I want to stay comfortable. I want to take care of my family. I'll just obey the government. I'll be a good citizen. I'll be very quiet.
Right, but citizens have a fundamental responsibility.
Yes.
They really do. And if you don't, guess what? Don't be surprised at others who are more than willing to abscond with power and then end up having power over you. History's not kind when it comes to power exercised abusively over others. We've just seen way too much in human history. It's sometimes challenging, even for me, even today, not to get too cynical about all this. On the other hand, you know, that arc of history does bend toward justice. I know it may be uneven and it may divert and may take tangents at time. It does bend. And there I was. I mean, that was a moment of truth for me, frankly. And it's, you know, it's what I've shared. I realize I serve as inspiration for others. I realize I was able to hold off the government. I realized I did not end up in prison for all that they attempted to do with me over a number of years to punish me so severely for literally speaking truth to power. But those are choices that are made. And, you know, I'm standing up in the public interest and for history. You know, you're an eyewitness to secret history, recognizing those choices that were made by the highest levels of our government, up to and including the White House, would have enormous downstream strategic consequences.
You know, when I look at you and I look at the other whistleblowers like Jesslyn Radick, who was a whistleblower herself and wound up defending you and others, John Kiriakou, William Binney, I haven't had the pleasure of talking to Jesslyn Radick or John Kiriakou, but I have had the pleasure of talking to William Binney. And I think many of us on the outside, when we look at the dragnet surveillance of the NSA, when we look at their retaliation against you and the fact that they never do anything to come after the people who are committing the crimes, and the crimes are exposed by whistleblowers like you, instead, they retaliate against you. So we look at that and many of us on the outside say, well, you know, this is just a nest of snakes. But when I see you and I see William Binney and I talk to you, I understand that there are some good people on the inside. And that is one of the things that it gives me hope. It really does give me hope to see principled people like you, principled people like William Binney. I wanted to get your reaction to this, Mr. Drake. There was something that was revealed in the Snowden leaks. It was put up on The Intercept. It was a document asking, are you the Socrates of the National Security Agency? I don't know if you saw this article or not, but it was something that they had floated around internally. They wanted people to look at this and to make a case for mass surveillance, for the government watching everyone. And this individual, it reminded me of the Stasi situation in East Germany, where everybody was spying on everyone else. Everyone was paranoid and concerned that we're being watched. And one of the things that he says, that one of the many thoughts that continually went through my mind, and this is an NSA employee, was that if I had to reveal part of my personal life to my employer, I'd really rather reveal it all, because partial revelation might lead to misunderstanding. And so he says he embraced total surveillance of him because he thought it would exonerate him. That's an amazing, I want to get your reaction to that, because it sounded to me like Norman Bates in the basement of the police station after they caught him. Stay with us. We'll be right back with Thomas Drake, an NSA whistleblower.
crashing through the lies and disinformation. It's Alex Jones on the GCN Radio Network.
Welcome back to the Alex Jones Show. I'm David Knight, and we have with us Thomas Drake, an NSA whistleblower. I want to go through the chronology of what happened with him, as he was one of the few people in our country to be charged under the Espionage Act for allegedly mishandling classified information, something that Hillary Clinton is notably not being charged for. But before we do, I wanted to ask Mr. Drake. I came across this thing, as we were talking about before we went to the break. This is a document that came out of the Snowden leaks, reported in The Intercept. And I want to read you this quote of what this NSA employee said. He said he was concerned that if people knew only a few things about him, he might seem suspicious. But if people knew everything about him, they would see that they had nothing to fear from him. He said, "This is the attitude I have brought to SIGINT work since then." I mean, I look at that, and is that the attitude you saw at the East Germany under the Stasi? Is that a mindset that you saw at the NSA?
Well, it's certainly those that serve the secrecy system and the secrecy regime. I mean, this is where national security, I have to remember, is like, as I call it, the state religion, and you don't question it. It is your authority, and when you're subject to it and serving it, then you confess all there is. You give up your sovereignty to the state, and that's precisely how the Stasi operated. Remember, they were the sword and the shield of the state. They were not operating in the best interest of people. In fact, people were considered to be threats. Anybody was suspicious, including people even within their own system.
Yeah, that was one of the things we saw with Chris Christie in the back and forth with Rand Paul. He said, well, of course we have to do dragnet surveillance on everybody. Otherwise, how will we know who we have to come after? I mean, everybody is guilty. They have to prove their innocence. They have to vet themselves. And that's the attitude we see from this guy inside the NSA. And that's the attitude of people like Chris Christie and those who prosecute this dragnet surveillance, isn't it?
That's why this has far less to do with, you know, terrorism, which has been the cover and color for all of this as the excuse. And it's far more about social control. Ultimately,
yes.
Mass surveillance is about social control.
Yes, yes,
it's
absolutely.
That simple. I don't have to elaborate. I don't have to get into philosophical discussions about it. That's precisely what it is.
Absolutely. I also have some questions here. People who have on Twitter, using the hashtag AskDrake, they've given us some questions. So I want to go over some of those as well. But first, let's lay out what happened in your particular case. So you began at the NSA. You've had an intelligence background within the Air Force. You've also worked with them off and on. But you began work, your actual first day that you report is September 11th, 2001, as that is all happening. Tell us what you were brought in to do and what you saw there.
Well, in some ways, I was, you know, an accidental hire. However, the Congress in particular, the key stakeholder overseeing NSA, had been grown very, very concerned over the intervening years, particularly in the post-Cold War era, about NSA's viability, its ability to remain relevant. And it was increasingly having difficulty keeping up with the challenges of the digital age and internet. And so they put a lot of pressure on NSA, and NSA, very reluctantly and digging in their heels, went ahead and decided to hire people from the outside, and that's meaning people that were not brought up there, were not promoted to the senior ranks from inside their own system. And I was one of about a dozen people that were hired in over about a 6 month or so period just prior to 9/11. And I was hired in as a senior change leader. That was actually my first title. And I reported to the number three person.
Wow.
And 9/11 was my first day. I was about 10,000 people in terms of the Signals Intelligence Directorate. It's the offensive side of NSA. And I was to get to know the ropes, follow the Signals Intelligence Director around, make recommendations, help NSA move into the 21st century. There have been a number of failures. There have been a number of studies that they were falling behind. And increasingly, the choices they were making was to simply marry themselves to the military-industrial complex and spend billions and billions of dollars to buy the solution instead of taking the very best of American ingenuity and innovation, you know, of necessity being the mother of invention, very, very low-cost programs that has super high impact, and put that very best into the fight.
And, of course, that low-cost, very effective program was the one that William Binney had done called Thin Thread. It essentially didn't make the haystack bigger, so it was harder to find the needles. It actually helped you to find the needles. But they passed that over for a program that was done outside. And that was Michael Hayden's decision. Is that correct?
Well, that was a fundamental choice. It was a buy versus make decision he made in spring of 2000. It was about a year and a half before 9/11. He just said, hey, you know, I'm just going to spend billions with the military intelligence congressional complex, as I put it, as Bill Binney says, the happiness management complex, and just spend. And that's it was an extraordinary amount of money. And so people are, you know, belling up to the Trailblazer bar. Trailblazer was the main flywheel contract that NSA was going to use to catapult itself into the 21st century. It really became a funding vehicle for all kinds of contractors. And never did deliver. It actually died in 2006.
But, of course, it involved a lot of companies like IBM, SAIC, Boeing, CSC. They made billions off of this, right?
But this, I mean, as I said, 9/11 became a profit center for any number of companies. I mean, this goes all the way back. This is something Eisenhower, interesting enough, actually warned the nation about during his farewell address, which was largely ignored at the time, but it's become one of those points in history in terms of a warning to the nation, because he realized that what he had unleashed from the 50s would probably have negative consequences going forward, that in essence, you would be beholden to secret power and vast amounts of money that would be operating not in the public interest, but operating in its own political and self-interest.
Absolutely. So,
and power protects itself. I mean, this yeah. is one of the simple things that I tell people. You have to remember, this kind of power, especially secret power, especially power involving military, especially power involving intelligence itself, you know, information is power. And when you can control that, when you can make money off it, when you can sell it with yourself and to others, well, then you know, it's very heady. Mm-hmm. And so you want to protect that power.
Not too many people can come around that without being corrupted and sucked into that. That's why
that's where Lord Acton, power does tend to corrupt. Doesn't mean it will corrupt, but it tends to.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Okay, so I want to talk a little bit about, I want to talk about 9/11, but before we do, I want to finish this chronology. When you're there, key things then that you're blowing the whistle about eventually are this massive, wasteful program that is also ineffective. I guess when we look at this, when we talk about a lot of medical issues, we always look about safety and efficacy, right? Is this medicine going to kill me? That's why we have the Constitution, trying to keep the government from killing us. And then we look at it, is it going to be effective to try to get the bad things, to get the bad guys, okay, to get the disease? And so you were showing that this was, you were concerned that it was violating the Constitution, that it was ineffective, that it was a massive boondoggle. So in 2004, is that about right? You go to internal channels to try to get something done about that?
Actually, I started much sooner. I was actually blowing the whistle with my immediate supervisor, the number three person, the Signals Intelligence Director, within just weeks of 9/11.
Oh, okay. That's right. Yeah. I'm looking at my notes. In 2004, that's when the Inspector General produced their final report. So that was after, so quite a bit of that had gone on. We're talking to Thomas Drake, NSA whistleblower. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Now take you live to the Central Texas Command Center in the heart of the resistance, rallying patriots worldwide. You're listening to the Alex Jones Show.
Welcome back to the Alex Jones Show. I'm David Knight, and we're talking to NSA whistleblower Thomas Drake. We were just talking about how, as he began working at the NSA, his first day was September 11th, 2001, he noticed that things had immediately changed. The rules of the game had changed. Mr. Drake, talk to us about how things had changed with the FISA court, for example.
Well, that was just one of a number of secret orders that were issued from the White House, as well as the other command authorities underneath the White House and the executive branch of the government. I don't think people yet fully appreciate precisely what 9/11 triggered. I said that, for all intents and purposes, 9/11 was the trigger in which the government in secret suspended the Constitution, and we've been operating under emergency powers ever since. Every time I say that, people just stare at me. Most people still stare at me in disbelief. They just can't imagine that happened. But that's effectively what did happen. Yes. And that's precisely what I confronted. One of the things they just tossed overboard and threw aside was the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, the secret court that was actually created in 1978 because under the Carter administration, because of severe abuses of executive power against Americans in violation of the Constitution in the previous decades.
And of course, you and I are about the same age. We grew up watching the situation with Richard Nixon. We grew up watching the Church Committee hearings, the Pike Committee hearings, brought to the public's attention for the first time, even the existence of the NSA. They've been secretly created by an executive order by President Truman. And when Pike asked the NSA director to show the charter that was created by executive order, he refused. Pike was absolutely amazed. He said, "We're giving you billions of dollars of funding here, and you won't even show us the charter that presumes to authorize you?" I mean, that's the way the NSA began, isn't it?
That was no such agency. Never say anything.
Exactly.
I mean, for all of its prowess, and there's a lot of history that has still yet to be written. You know, it was an intelligence agency. It was a military intelligence agency. It wasn't formed by Congress. There was no legislation. There was no bill signed into law by the president. It was literally the stroke of a secret pen in 1952. And people just don't fully appreciate what that means and how easy is it to abuse that power. And, you know, that came to a head in the 70s. That's why for me, you know, I grew up as a very young teenager during the 70s. And I remember all of those abuses of power unfolding. People forget that the articles of impeachment that were actually formulated, you know, in the House of Representatives, you know, against President Nixon included using instruments of national power against the American public in violation of the Constitution. And, you know, we ultimately had a president resigning his office. Of course, Nixon, you know, later said, as you may recall, during the interviews, the Frost interviews, that, you know, if the president says it's not legal, then it's okay. You know, it's legal. I mean, if he says it's okay, it's legal.
Yeah, and along those lines, I want to play this clip for you and get your reactions. Again, we've had Michael Hayden bragging about what he did in the aftermath of this. This is a clip from Washington and Lee University, and of course, we've had a lot of discussions about Section 215 of the Patriot Act. They claim that authorized them to retain all this information from Americans to do dragnet surveillance. The question being, of course, the Patriot Act, itself obviously violates our rights under the Constitution. But this is what Michael Hayden had to say about Section 215.
Oh, your talk today about 215? 215 is such a safe haven. 215 is legislated by Congress. I was doing metadata collection under the president's raw Article 2 authorities from October 7th, 2001 forward.
That's just so amazing to me. Every time I look at that clip, the arrogance of Michael Hayden saying, 215, that was a safe haven, that was done by the Congress, of course, in violation of the Constitution. Then he says, I had orders from the president. He points to his chest. What do we call a system of government where one person makes all the orders, Mr. Drake?
Yeah, it comes under different names, but tyranny, totalitarianism. When you combine it, you know, what people don't fully appreciate yet is extraordinary partnerships that NSA engaged in, had even before 9/11, with a number of telcos and other information technology companies, but particularly the telephone companies. They've had those partnerships for a long, long time. Those are greatly expanded after 9/11. You know, that's a fascist system. This is what happened. I mean, he's actually chortling about the powers that he had,
yes,
before things had to be put back into the box once they started being exposed in the press.
Yes, I guess that's one of the things.
Raw executive authority is not the form of government I took an oath to support and defend. In fact, that's an alien form of government that is a direct threat to our republic.
Absolutely. And you can see how much he loves that power in that clip and the other times where he's bragged about this. So you see this is happening, and immediately you start talking to people internally, going through proper channels. This takes a very long time. And in 2004, the DOD Inspector General produces their final report. Tell us about that.
Well, the final report, that had to do with the thin thread and trailblazer requirements. And you know, it was a secret report. There never was a public version made until shortly after the conclusion of my criminal case, many, many years later. But that report made it clear that, you know, Trailblazers was an utter failure and many billions of money, billions and billions have been spent. But that was just one of the channels that where I blew the whistle. I also was a material witness and whistleblower for two 9/11 congressional investigations. But all of my material evidence, all of the depositions, the oral testimony, all of it was censored and suppressed. In fact, as I found out later, the only record that exists that anybody can find to date, now we're talking over 13 years later, is that I was interviewed. All the actual evidence apparently is buried. What does that tell you? It was so secret that it couldn't even be in the secret report of the joint inquiry.
So they swept all that under the rug. They kept it secret.
The Constitution's been suspended. I mean, this is what I confronted the general counsel on NSA. I said, you're asking me to accept that in the name of national security that we can just simply set aside the Constitution. I said there is a constitutional means in this country. If the laws aren't working or the laws are insufficient, we go to Congress. And he said, if we do that, they'll say no. And what you don't understand, Mr. Drake, we live in exigent conditions. This is emergency conditions. It was the ends, you know, justified the means. And so we just need the data. And it was just extraordinary. It didn't matter where they got it from. It was just, and they had the authority of the president.
Yeah. Yeah. Literally. So we live in an emergency.
So they're gonna follow orders. So obviously something like me getting in the way, standing up, is going to be a marked person. And, you know, I was targeted very early on as a troublemaker. I was targeted very early on as a threat to the orders that are being handed down. And, of course, they kept this very secret. The vast majority of NSA did not know that there was this whole other program in which they had literally turned the United States of America into the equivalent of a foreign nation for vast dragnet electronic surveillance on an extraordinary scale, a scale that has still not been fully revealed to this day, in spite of even the Snowden disclosures, in spite of the disclosures that I made, in spite of the disclosures that others made, although more information has been coming out.
And of course, that's one of the things that scares us so much is the idea that they're at war with the entire world, including American territory. When we look at the indefinite detention without trial by the U.S. military, as you pointed out, of course, the NSA began and continues as a military intelligence organization. Those are the things that keep us awake at night if we actually look into this abyss. And I want to talk to you, too, about geospatial intelligence and some of those aspects of tracking our activity. Looking at our metadata, what the consequences of that are. We have so many things to discuss. I wish we had more time. I want to continue on, though, with what happened with your prosecution when we come back. And after you hit this stone wall of secrecy. In 2005, you contact a reporter and you send her some emails and it exposes some of what is going on. And then the retaliation starts. When we come back, we're going to talk to Thomas Drake, NSA whistleblower, about how that retaliation looked. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Big Brother. Mainstream media. Government cover-ups. You want answers? Well, so does he. Live from Austin, Texas, broadcasting worldwide, it's Alex Jones.
Welcome back to the Alex Jones Show. I'm David Knight. We're talking to Thomas Drake, NSA whistleblower. We're going through the chronology of what happened to him, and we're about at the point where they come after him and allege that he mishandled classified documents. Amazing parallels to what's going on with Hillary Clinton. And amazing the hypocrisy that we see in our government. We're going to go right back to Mr. Drake in just a moment. Real quickly, I want to let you know that we have at InfoWarsLife.com a special today. 30% off of Silver Bullet if you buy one bottle. If you buy two bottles, you can get two for free. That's 50% off. That's our 30 parts per million colloidal silver and a pure base of deionized water. There's a reason listeners have dubbed Silver Bullet as their preparedness silver. That's in stock right now. It's a good time for you to stock up. You can get it, again, for 30% off a single bottle, or you can buy two, get two free. That's at InfoWarsLife.com. Well, Mr. Drake, we were just talking about what happened. You go to the NSA. You began on September 11th, and I want to get to that in this final segment that we have with you as well. What you saw there, you saw Dragnet surveillance. You were concerned about the constitutionality of that. You were concerned about the massive boondoggle waste that was happening. You went through internal channels. You went to the House. There was a report filed. It was kept secret. The public was not notified. Then in 2005, now we get to this point, you go to a reporter at the Baltimore Sun. She writes about what has happened with some of the information that you gave her, non-classified information that you gave her. Now they get into retaliation mode. And in 2007, they raid you, they raid Mr. Binney and others. Tell us about that.
Yeah, I actually contacted a reporter for the first time in late February of 2006 anonymously. I was well aware of the surveillance system. And it was clear that when the James Risen, Eric Lichtblau article was published in December 2005, New York Times, revealing for the first time publicly the existence of the so-called warrantless wiretapping program, that there, people like myself would no doubt become targets if they launched an investigation. They did that 2 weeks later. Long story short, myself and my colleagues and others became targets because we were some of the few people that actually knew about the Stellar Wind, or what came under the president's surveillance program, that had been, you know, in the operating the deepest of secrecy since shortly after 9/11. Long story short, I was put under extraordinary surveillance, physical and electronic, and my colleagues were raided unceremoniously and searched in July. And then 4 months later, I was getting ready to go down to the National Defense University where I was teaching. And I looked out my window, and there's a dozen FBI agents streaming across the front lawn, and that's when the nightmare began.
Wow. Wow. And you know, even though this has been released by the whistleblowers and after your prosecution, as late as 2013, we had James Clapper still lying publicly to Congress when Ron Wyden asked him about this Dragnet surveillance. He says, no, not to my knowledge. And that was just a few months before Ed Snowden's documents came out. They were still maintaining this line 6 years later that they weren't doing this. Now, tell us what they came after you for, what they alleged that you'd
been saying. About a lie, you know, it travels, you know, just about all the way around the world before truth even gets its boots on, right? They go chasing after it. So you just wait for the lie to come around, and then you just, you know, kick it. that's when you notice it. It gets in the way, right? It runs right into the truth, right?
That's right. Never lie. I mean, even though they have all this has come out in your trial, sure. You know, years before, they're continuing to hold to this line. And tell us about these documents that were supposedly classified that you were charged with willful retention of. I mean, I'm looking at some of these titles. What a Success, Regular Meetings, Friends. Volume is Our Friend. I mean, this is the kind of management development stuff that you have to set through in some of these corporations, you know, as part of a requirement. You can't stay awake. This is ridiculous. This is not anything that is even serious.
It was all a frame job because they wanted to burn somebody. I know from inside sources, Cheney had sent out the edict, find and fry somebody, make an example of them, burn them. And they actually thought that I was a ringleader for disclosing the secret surveillance programs, the program they wanted to keep way off the radar. The last thing they wanted people to know was the public. And so they came after me with everything they had. And ironically enough, it's the very documents that in whole or in part I had given to government investigators looking at Thin Thread, Trailblazer, and 9/11 intelligence. And they're all unclassified. And so ultimately, you know, they took them. They forced classification review, decided they were super top secret, that many of them would cause exceptionally grave damage to the United States of America, the national security of the United States, if it was disclosed. And then it took them from November 2007 all the way until April of 2010, now under Obama, not under Bush, but under Obama, to find a way to indict me. And they indicted me under the 1917 World War I era Espionage Act.
And that's, of course, been a favorite of the Obama administration. He's indicted more people under that act than all the previous presidents for the past 100 years combined. Lanny Brewer was the one who oversaw your prosecution. Of course, he was the one who let the banks who were doing money laundering for drug cartels and terrorists, he let them go, saying they were too big to jail. How do you feel about the parallels between your case and what's going on with Hillary Clinton?
It's surreal. I have to tell you, it really is. And you know, I've had some really interesting flashbacks just seeing all this play itself out. You know, part of me realized the vice grip of national security that she's in. And, you know, this is, you don't trifle with classification. You don't trifle with secrecy. And this is, it's a sort of like, you know, this is hardcore religion, right? You're in violation of the doctrine. You're in violation. Now, having said that, there is clearly a double standard.
Yes.
Right? A huge double standard.
Oh,
so
huge.
In my case, blowing the whistle, not leaking, because leaking is not done in the public interest. Most of blowing is, you know, yes. Threats to public safety or health, fraud, waste, abuse, violations of law. So whistleblowing in this case, criminalized because you're revealing government misconduct and wrongdoing and violations of law, including violations of the Constitution. But hey, you get to play with the information and send it to your buds and use it for political purposes. We're going to protect you.
And of course, what Hillary Clinton did, William Leonard, his former director of the Information Security Oversight Office, that's the people who do the classification stuff, he said that the stuff that you had should have never been classified. I mean, there's the things like we mentioned before. Let's have regular meetings. Volume is our friend and everything. On the other hand, Hillary Clinton has got intel from foreign leaders, conversations she had with them, were intercepted intelligence that the NSA got. That's the kind of stuff that she has. And the same man who said that your stuff never should have been classified, that they tried to hang you on, William Leonard, said that there's a lot of stuff that Hillary Clinton had that is born classified, whether it was marked that way or when she put it onto her computer or whether that was done later.
Precisely. No, I mean, this is why it's so surreal. We're talking about operational intelligence. We're talking about conduct of foreign affairs, very high level diplomacy. You're talking about other channels of information that are extraordinarily sensitive.
We've only got
and
about.
Here she is on a private server, you know, and she apparently, it turns out, there's a lot of people that she was communicating with via that means.
Absolutely, and so I think there is certainly a security violation in her case. It certainly was retaliation in yours. Now we only got a couple of minutes left, and I really wanted to get to this earlier. On 9/11, you pointed out that you saw that there was intelligence that the FBI, the CIA, the NSA had information that they could have stopped this beforehand. Tell us about that.
Well, in summary, there was critical intelligence that was never shared properly, never acted upon, in some cases deliberately so, that could have stopped 9/11 dead in its tracks. And that's just from the NSA side. That doesn't count a lot of the other failures or cover up of information that should have made it for action. I mean, look, the government is supposed to provide for the common defense, and it utterly failed. You know, the entire system was designed after World War II. We would never be surprised again. You know, the quote unquote, never will you again have an electronic Pearl Harbor.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And yet it's clear that it was also used, you know, there was the Cheney and company were looking for an excuse. I have to say that. I mean, I'm aware of a lot of the theories about 9/11. I'm just saying, when I was at NSA, you can imagine the shock of discovering critical intelligence reports that unfolded the entire Al-Qaeda network, which I shared with all the investigators, by the way, at the time that I had it. When in fact, if they had been shared it properly, it could have stopped 9/11. And what does that tell you? So 9/11 happens, and yet they're too big to fail, and all of it was a huge intelligence failure. And look what unleashed. Okay, that is the consequence of not providing for the common defense.
9/11 happened. They knew, as you point out, they had information. They could have stopped it. They could have looked. They could have made counterintelligence a bigger priority. They deliberately made that a low priority. But of course, I believe that as we look at this, and Senator Graham has also said there's too many coincidences just to write this off. There had to be somebody kind of quarterbacking this. I mean, what do you think of things like, for example, Building 7, which just happened to fall down without even being hit by a plane?
Well, there's a lot of controversy about that, you know, but also housed a lot of secret operations.